This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
When investigators opened the front trunk of a Tesla, they didn't just uncover a body, they uncovered a snapshot of panic. Of course, we're talking about the David case and the Celeste body in there, the kind of impulsive split-second decision that says more about psychology than actual planning. A 14-year-old girl, a 20-year-old musician, and a choice that makes no rational sense. We don't even know if he's the one who put it in there, but we know the vehicle was registered to him. Hiding a body in a car, registered to one's own name. It's not criminal genius. It's not the collapse of judgment. Something we see over and over again when young people make catastrophic choices that destroy lives in an instant. And, well, David was surrounded by other young people that seem to be very good at making catastrophic choices in an instant. Today, we're joined by psychotherapist Siobhan Scott, unpacking the psychology of that decision, the why behind these senseless choices, and what the developing brain has to do with all of it. Siobhan, welcome. Obviously, there's a lot of questions here still in this case. We don't know who put the body in the trunk. No one has been charged in this case whatsoever. We don't even know exactly how she died yet, but somebody thought this was a good idea. Let's start with the basics. When we talk about impulsivity and poor decision making in young people, what's actually happening in the brain here? How does the prefrontal cortex, or the lack of it in full development, affect the judgment of those making these critical decisions in critical moments, whoever made this choice?
Yeah, it's a really good point. You know, we can separate the brain into different parts, and we often use a kind of an oversimplified model of the triune brain. Mm-hmm. But you've got the primitive brain, which is the brainstem, and that's what keeps your heart beating, keeps you breathing, keeps your, you know, your basic motor skills going. Then you've got that emotional center of the brain, which is moving up toward the front, and that emotional center of the brain has all your emotions and your drives and your neurohormonal system, right? But then you've got the prefrontal cortex, which is the very last part to develop in the brain and the last part to evolve in mammals. And that's what we call the thinking brain. That's where you get judgment, impulse control, and your ability to analyze facts and situations and you know, make plans, the executive part of the brain. And that is, unfortunately, the last part of the brain to develop. So you've got this emotional center on the brain, on high-powered hormonal influences, everything's cooking in there. But this thinking part of the brain, the part that can say, hey, stand back, think about this, take another course of action, maybe this isn't the right thing, that part of the brain doesn't really come online until about 25, which is why we see so many young people doing really stupid things. Now, I think a case could also be made that for some people, it never really does come online. And that's mm-hmm. the person with chronic problems. And often you see that with people who become criminals. It's sort of like the thinking brain just never really plugged in there. You know, we'll often talk about criminal psychopaths as if they're some kind of geniuses. You know, they've got this criminal superpower. In truth, most of them are pretty darn stupid. And mm-hmm. make stupid mistakes.
Is there something that happens that stunts the growth of this? I mean, and we're talking like physical growth here to a certain extent, but is there something when you're talking earlier, like some folks that where it never comes online, it seems, are there things that can inhibit that from ever coming online that could be outside things such as chemicals, drugs, yep. alcohol, things of that nature, but also environmental things as well, conditional things as well, yep. ways that one may be living their life. I'm curious about all of that. Let's start with the physical things that one could end up putting in their body that could do that. Then let's move on to more conditional, situational type things.
Yeah, great question. Because things going all the way back to birth trauma to the head at birth can cause problems in maturation of the brain and the frontal lobes not developing right. You mentioned substances can certainly impair brain development. And the way that kids are parented influences it. So you can encourage kids through lots of problem solving, encouraging them to talk things through. So it's the combination of the environment, toxins in the environment, injuries to the head or the brain, going all the way back to birth. And so sometimes there are substances that a mother might ingest during pregnancy that affect the brain development of her fetus and ultimately the child that she produces. So there's so many variables with it.
Kind of makes you wonder how any of us turn out to be somewhat quote unquote normal at this point, doesn't it? I mean, doesn't it seem like there should be more psychopaths walking the earth based on those variables?
Secret, there is.
Thanks, Tony.
Surprise! They just don't all act out. Am I accurate in that statement, Siobhan?
I think so. I think you know, full blown psychopaths with all the terrible qualities that psychopaths have that are extreme are not that common. But sure, people who are on the continuum with some psychopathic behavior, I think about 30% of the human population has to some degree some significant psychopathic traits. You know, there's a book out, and I just started reading it this week. It's been out for a few months, called Murderland. And it's a fascinating book. If true crime people like to read these kind of things, I would recommend it. But the theory behind the book is that why did the Pacific Northwest produce Ted Bundy and the Green River Killer and all these other, you know, apparently we have more than our share of them up here where I live in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. And going into the history of the industrialization of this part of the country with all the mills and the smelters and all the stuff that was happening, things became incredibly polluted back in the 40s and 50s.
When you got nuclear out there, too.
Yeah, that wasn't identified because she was going back in her research to the 40s and 50s, and the specific toxins were lead and arsenic. But that really impacts little children developmentally, and she makes the case that this could have impacted the brain. I'm not done with the book yet, so I don't know how well she wraps it all up together. But it's a very interesting book. But again, going back to, does our environment affect brain development and ultimately why people end up with poor judgment or impaired decision-making?
I know. I mean, a lot of people, I think, are looking at this David case, and everybody runs everything through their filter of how would I have done it? Right. And I think a lot of adults will look at this and go, whoever did this. And I think the assumption is it was probably somebody in the circle of David or Dave. Nobody knows who it is, but somebody likely in that ring, because they were close. And if we look at the circle, they're all pretty much young people, very young people. So somebody made the decision to put that body in that trunk. We don't know if it was out of fear of, and we don't know the motive. That's the thing. Was it fear of being caught? Was it fear of whatever it may have been? Was she murdered? Was it self-inflicted? All those questions we don't know the answers to. But when you go to that, everybody's going, well, when I was that age, I wouldn't have thought that way. I would have been smart enough not to do that. I myself, when I ran that through, I wouldn't have put a body in a trunk if you were in that sort of a situation, no matter what. That, like, somebody's dead, accident, on purpose, whatever the hell it is. I don't see any way where one goes, oh, I'll just hide it in the trunk and this will be a great resting place. Right. We'll totally get away with it. And so that runs through the filters. But is it, I mean, obviously everybody develops a bit different in terms of their prefrontal cortex and these types of decision making. Is there something here that we can look at more tangibly and say, okay, the folks who are thinking this way, this is part of a greater picture. This is part of a greater picture of development of these large groups of people. It felt like there was usually a couple in the group that were pretty stupid that would have thought, yeah, trunk's a great idea, let's do it. But it usually wasn't the collective group as a whole that was making absolute horrible decisions. There was usually somebody in those groups back then that would be, no, guys, let's do this. Yeah, that makes more sense. It feels like that's absent from a lot of youth today. And I guess that's the big question is why does it feel so different when we're looking at and interacting with folks of this age? Not all of them by any means, but it feels like numbers far greater than there was even 10 years ago in terms of just having what most would just call common sense.
Yeah, I can't speak to data. You know me, I always go, if I'm going to say it, I want to say I have data on it. And I don't have any data on our young people getting dumber in this way.
Right.
I'd say observationally they are. but yes, I don't have any data on it either.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess the question is, you know, is it so... Because there is different ways, obviously, of looking at intelligence and dumb, stupid. That's a very relative term. But, you know, is it where it's accelerating in areas that we hadn't in the past? And then in this area over here, we're missing something of a connection to humanity. It feels like is missing in a lot of people, a lot of young people, when you talk to them about stuff, just the lack of, I guess, understanding or empathy for fellow human beings. I mean, I see it in my own world. I see it with, you know, I have a daughter who's 13. It's interesting to see the way she reacts to things. It's interesting to hear how her friends react to things. And some of it just seems very cold and extremely callous. Mm-hmm. Like far colder and callous than I remember people being not all that long ago.
It feels like the empathy is gone. And yeah. I can't put my finger on what's happened. Is it because we had a pandemic and pulled some of these kids out of socialization for a number of years, and now they, you know, things that they were seeing were on screens, so they weren't seeing in-person reactions and things like that. I don't know. It just feels like people are not as empathetic as they used to be. Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
It's certainly a concern, the lack of empathy, that I think internet culture can also fuel it with mm-hmm. the kinds. And again, depending on what, not that the internet's a bad thing. I spend a lot of time on the internet, as you guys know, but it depends on what you're looking at. And is there a lot of content that people are getting caught up online that is basically encouraging this sense of disconnection? And is that mainly how people are having relationships, you know, online? And maybe mm-hmm. the lack of those deeper human relationships could have something to do with why people seem to be relating to each other with less empathy and kindness.
I mean, that seems to be one of the bigger factors is, you know, everybody has their phone, everybody interacts in these ways that are not... not ways that humanity has ever interacted in the past.
Right.
So it's like brand new territory as to how our brains will work with this. And evolution takes time for us to adapt to things like this. I mean, let's talk about that for a second. I mean, just the ways that we interact now, especially kids that are brought up interacting the ways that they do with each other, the lack of human interaction. What sort of world are we creating here? What sort of, you know, evidence are we seeing of this seems to be a slightly different group of folks that are coming up because of the conditions in which they're growing up around?
I think it's really changing brains, and we don't know a lot about how because we don't have long-term data on all that yet. But I think people's ability to, you know, have practical level social skills in real social environments is probably altered. I definitely see a lot of impact when it comes to young men and their use of internet porn and then their ability to date women, real life mm-hmm. women, mm-hmm. and to learn how to talk and how to build connections and friendships and how to ask people out and how to do those early phases of how do you explore sexuality with your partner. They think everything is supposed to work like a porn movie, and that's concerning. And so that's, I think, for me as a therapist, that's where it shows up a lot, that we're seeing a very different kind of young man because of the internet porn.
That's a really interesting point.
And that's an interesting point on this. A lot of people are jumping to conclusions that this was some sort of a romantic relationship that was going on between David and Celeste, and now she's dead, so it must be the partner. And again, he's never been charged with anything. We don't know what actually happened here. We also don't know if they were in a romantic relationship as well. That seems to be a very quick thing that the internet is jumping to as a conclusion. Society is jumping to as a conclusion. I would argue maybe there wasn't a romantic relationship here at all. This was a friend. This was someone that maybe, you know, he was confiding in. There's a lot of, you know, guys that are friends with women that it's not a sexual relationship and it's completely normal. And they can be straight. They can be gay. It doesn't really matter. But I think that that seems to be another area that people are jumping to conclusion on here a little fast. What's your thoughts on that in terms of there being a romantic tie here, or if that's just us or society trying to fill in the blanks of questions where we have blank spaces?
Well, as you said, there's a lot of blank spaces, but there are areas of concern. And I did find, I had to look for it, but I did find the deleted live stream video of David with Celeste. Mm-hmm. And she was clearly a child. Mm-hmm. He clearly seemed to be in control. There was a lot of concerning body language going on. And there did seem to be quite a degree of intimacy between the two of them. Mm-hmm. She was a runaway, a vulnerable kid, obviously had much less power in the world than he has. And I can, raise my eyebrows. It was something I think if I were investigating this, I would certainly be looking very closely at that relationship.
I mean, it makes you think, like, what's going through your mind? Why are you bringing in, and it's probably not, they're not thinking of it in these ways, of you're bringing in a runaway, you know, that the person should be either reunited with their family or get help if the family's not a safe place to be, whatever it may be. We don't know the answers to all those questions. But the thought is, well, let's basically kind of make her part of the posse here. Mm-hmm. And do live streams with her, this girl that's supposedly missing. Again, that's another thing where are they just completely void of thinking of this in reality's terms of what's going on around them? Is this just, she's just another person? I mean, and at that age too, you're 20. It was not that long ago. You were 15. It was like literally 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So you are still fairly immature in your thinking, and you may have friends who are of that age too. That's not unheard of at that point in time. So what do you think is going on in the minds of people like this, especially in that live stream, just knowing what we know now that she was missing at that time, supposedly, he's someone that has some money, some power, some clout going on. What the hell are you doing live streams with a runaway for? I mean,
good question.
I mean, what? It's just, I can't picture this like happening as blatantly as it is today, 10, 20 years ago. R. Kelly, as monstrous as he was, I don't see him like jumping on live streams if the ability was there all those years ago with people that were known to be like missing. It's kind of unfathomable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing that stood out for me with the live stream was near the end of it when he said, we've got to delete this. How do we delete this?
Yeah.
And there is some consciousness of maybe I just blew it here. And how do we get rid of it? So,
yeah.
It definitely, I can see why the public would be going there with the fears. And if I were investigating the case, I'd sure be looking at it. Was there a relationship here? Because even though, yes, it is normal for 20-year-olds to still hang out and be friends with younger people, it's also very normal for older males to sexually exploit younger females. Sure. And she was a beautiful young woman, and that would not surprise anybody, I don't think, if that were happening.
No, whether it was him or someone in the group, I would not be surprised if that was happening. I don't know, you know, who or what or if at all, but obviously that could possibly be part of this. We don't have the answers to any of that. Yeah. You've worked with a lot of young people in your life. I mean, what are some of the common patterns that you've seen in their thinking right after a crime? Do they truly believe that they can outsmart detection, or is it more like magical thinking under duress?
You can certainly see magical thinking, which is that tendency to believe that just because I want something really bad, or I pray, or I do some kind of ritual, that it's going to go my way. And that, again, is something that a lot of people carry into adulthood. But there can be that. And sometimes there's an awareness that I'm probably going to get caught, but I'm going to delay it for as long as I can. Mm-hmm. And so when they get caught, they're not really surprised. So it can go either way with that. But yeah, the poor judgment of whoever thought leaving a body in a trunk and then leaving the car in a public place, that this was a good idea, there was something wrong. The other thing that popped into my head as a possibility, kids partying, drugs, alcohol, could this have been something where somebody was even in a blackout and mm-hmm. did something really stupid, and then the next day doesn't even recall what they did and how it happened? That could account for really bad judgment too, because sometimes people do really stupid things in a blackout and they just don't have any recollection of what they did.
It makes you wonder, because you don't know what went on, and all those things run through my mind as well. The fact that the last known photo of her, proof of being alive, basically, was January 2nd. Does that say anything to you about this case of what may have went down? I mean, just pure speculation. We obviously don't know. But right after New Year's, I don't know. I mean, that's a time where, you know, a lot of change happens around mm-hmm. us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of times weird things do happen in January because there has been so much, if we look at substance use, so much of that going on over the holidays. I used to always joke that you were going to get all the calls from couples needing marital therapy in January because people had behaved so badly at the New Year's Eve party. So
mm-hmm. I've seen that.
And that's yep. true. Yeah.
Yeah. There's just so many questions here in this case that we just do not know the answers to, and likely never will. Who knows what will eventually come out as the investigation continues. They did hire a private investigator. The owner of the house that David was allegedly renting has hired a private investigator, to which the way he's describing it, and I'm paraphrasing here, the private investigator is claiming he found notes inside of that house. We don't know if they were digital, if they were on a hard drive of some sort, or if they were on print, that described horrific things, very sadistic things is the way I believe the term that he used, involving Celeste. And I guess there's two ways of looking at that, of sadistic and dark, meaning when she was alive or after she died. Things to dispose of a body and not be caught, or things that you would do to a living person. Mm-hmm. Again, disturbing either way, really. But does the judgment change in people's minds, especially young people's minds, I guess, when talking about the lack of the prefrontal cortex, from when a person is living to when the person is deceased? I guess the defining factor here is how they died. If it was an accident, if they overdosed on something, if they took their own life, and now this is a problem. The term is also the Celeste problem that was used by the PI, meaning we have a 15-year-old girl that's dead with us, and now we don't know what to do because she was a runaway and we were harboring a runaway. What do we do with that? In terms of what people are capable of doing, do people start dehumanizing that individual upon death?
Certainly possible. It could also be that this was, you know, again, are we looking at just youth and stupid youthful behavior, impulsive, poorly thought out, lack of problem solving skills? Are we looking at that? Or are we looking at something darker where there is something more exploitative and psychopathic and cruel going mm-hmm. on? And I can also see why the public would make a leap in that direction based upon some of the song lyrics, you know, right. And again, we look at all these things in the context, and writing a song about wanting to kill somebody is not necessarily mean you're going to go out and kill people, or that you even fantasize about it. But there is that concept of leakage, which, as we've talked about so many times, when the internal thoughts and emotions that a person have comes out in their conversation, maybe in their internet things they write, or in art that they create. And that mm-hmm. would include song lyrics too. And so if people have written songs about murder. And then there's a dead body found. Of course, people are going to make the leap. Did that song, was that leakage? Is this something that was actually part of your fantasy that you had been thinking about?
He had the song that came out in 2022, Romantic Homicide. So obviously this would have been way before any of this had taken place. It's dark. It's, it's the type of music that he made. I've heard the term the other day for the first time, sad boy music. There's sad girl music, and I know we've seen that forever, but sad boy music, and that's kind of what his music was. It was dark, it was sad, it was somewhat disturbing R&B music about loss, about tragedy, about trying to deal with the thoughts and emotions and the feelings, all that's there. And then we hear, and again, this is again another big piece of the unconfirmed, we don't know the details, that there was lyrics or part of a song that was created, written, found somewhere, called Celeste. If in fact he wrote a song, again, big if this happened, if he wrote a song for her, knowing that she was dead and that the body was somewhere with his crew, that's another big weird one of like, oh, we're gonna take this through our art, and we're gonna make music about it. Mm-hmm. It seems like such weird magical thinking of what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Why are you creating this song about someone, a death that nobody is, this girl is missing? It blows your mind. It really does. And the fact that someone would do that, let's say he did do that, what does that say?
Mm-hmm. Some people are very unaware of what they're leaking out, and they're continually processing. This may be true for artists very much so, maybe that they're constantly doing this internal processing and taking it external. So they're creating certain kinds of paintings, creating certain kinds of poetry, certain kinds of songs, always based upon what's cooking in their head. Mm-hmm. And so it could just be the lack of awareness. Gee, what's cooking in my head? Maybe I need to keep that to myself.
Yeah. That lack of awareness seems to be key in so many of these cases.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Extra Value Meals are back. That means 10 tender, juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.